I'm hoofbound.
Yeah, I'm hoofbound and down. Loaded up and nutting. Well.
It's Smokey and the Bandit here. Or Toki and the Bandit.
I'm dying. It shouldn't.
Your eyes are watering and everything.
Yeah, it's like I just ate like a hot wing, but I just took a big graph bong hit to celebrate everyone's favorite day. The day Raincoat Report comes out.
Right, Wednesday.
Yeah, Wednesday, 4:20.
Yes, you know, as always, we celebrate our holidays late on the Raincoat Report.
Late, early, it don't matter.
I think of all the holidays, 4:20 is the one that makes the most sense to celebrate late.
Yeah. It's perfect for a guy who doesn't know where he's at. It's 4:20, it's time to record.
It is time to record, and it's time to talk about one of our favorite auteurs. And by favorite auteurs, I mean people we've talked about and had very different thoughts about different films.
Really mixed opinions.
Yes. Yeah, I think our opinions aren't any more mixed about any individual director, probably, than Anthony Spinelli.
I'll agree. I'll drink to that.
He, of course, directed the first film we covered on this show, Dixie Ray, Hollywood Star, a.k.a. It's called Murder, Baby.
I think we need to revisit that one and make sure it doesn't suck.
I think it's probably good, because he also directed Afternoon Delights, which wasn't quite up to that level, but I think it was a pretty fun movie.
I thought it was Sean Costello.
I don't... Hang on.
Joint feature. I don't know.
I might be totally wrong.
You forgot we even watched this movie until you opened up your notes, is what you said.
That is true. No, I remembered that we watched this movie. I just didn't remember what this movie was. And you're right. It was Sean Costello. What was... I thought there was another movie from Anthony Spinelli that we watched that wasn't bad. But, you know, I might be wrong about that.
There's a good chance that we've only seen one good film from him. But I'll say this one comes close to approaching a good film.
Yeah, it's got some promise to it. It's just not totally executed upon.
Yeah, but, you know, that's all for later in the show. They're trying to fuck me at work.
Oh, yeah? How so?
They've taken away the free coffee.
Oh, that's fucked up.
Yeah. It's evil.
I think, like, even as somebody who doesn't really drink a lot of coffee, I just expect work to have coffee at all times.
Yeah, it should be there. They made coffee to make work more bearable.
Okay. He directed Sex World, which isn't necessarily a great movie.
But it's a movie you've seen.
But it's a movie that's like...
That we haven't covered.
Have we not covered... I thought we covered Sex World when we were doing the Raincoat Files.
Nope, we never got around to it.
Oh. I know we did Pleasure Maze, which is...
We did Things to Come.
Things to Come.
We did quite a few films, but no, we have not done Sex World yet.
Oh, well, shit.
Because it has a theme song, and we would have talked about it, and I would have remembered that.
Fair enough. Well, shit. Okay, so I guess maybe we've only covered one decent Anthony Spinelli film. He also directed a couple movies that are somewhat notable. Nothing to Hide is one that I've heard a lot about, and Talk Dirty to Me is another one. But we haven't covered those either. So, but we have covered such films of his as An Act of Confession and Sex in the Comics, which are not great. Succula.
Not great.
Not great. The Seduction of Lynn Carter. We covered that, didn't we?
Not great.
Not great. Okay, well. Oh, he did Oriental Babysitter.
Terrible.
Okay, well, Anthony Spinelli.
You're on notice.
You're further down the list than I thought you were going into this.
Yeah, see?
I'll say, not to spoil a future episode, but that Sex World is better than the other movies that I listed. Probably not better than Dixie Ray, but we'll revisit that and talk about that at a later date. Maybe this year when we get into the Raincoat Files.
We already did the Raincoat Files.
Weren't we doing that in like December or something?
I think it was January.
Oh, I don't know.
Okay, well, we'll get back into
it. We'll cover Sex World at some point under some guise.
Yeah.
But in the meantime, we're going to cover, I don't think we've mentioned it yet, Expectations.
No, we hadn't mentioned it. And you know what else?
What else?
I don't need to mention it.
Why is your work taking away coffee?
I don't know. I think they're trying to destroy us, like, psychologically, so we all quit.
Okay, that makes sense.
I'm not sure why, though. I don't know. I really don't understand what they're trying to do, except torture me.
That makes sense.
But why?
I don't know.
Do you think they're going out of business? And they're like, because they mentioned cost as being a problem. But they said they were spending, like, in addition to coffee, they're also taking away, like, utensils and stuff. Like paper plates, forks.
It's pretty much. Yeah, I think that is a concerning sort of cost savings for a company to be making.
Yeah, apparently they're spending $2,000 a week on this stuff. And I was like, you all are, like, someone's, like, dipping.
There's no way.
Yeah, I was like, that's a lie number. I was like, that was a number they made up to be like, oh boy.
How big is the company you work for? How many employees are there?
It's not huge. There's maybe like 50-ish employees.
That would imply that they're spending $40 a week on each employee's.
Yeah, I did the math. I think I might have messed the numbers up a bit. But yeah, it was like 50, 40. There's three shifts. So I don't know. I don't understand. It's insane. I think it would maybe be cheaper if they just didn't get Keurig pods.
It sounds like it would be cheaper for them to buy you Starbucks at that rate.
Yeah, you think so.
That doesn't add up at all.
No, nothing.
Are they going to stop buying toilet paper for the bathrooms too?
They took the first aid kits out of the bathrooms because apparently people were just stealing Band-Aids out of them. Yeah, apparently there's like some like theft issues going on. There's reports of a plunger being stolen. It's funny that the company's big enough now that none of this is like can be laid at my feet the way it would have been like a year ago.
Yeah.
Because I was the person actually just like stealing snacks and stuff.
Who steals a plunger?
Someone whose toilet is clogged at home.
I guess so. But I mean, I would imagine if there's a plunger out at work, it's probably used, right?
You'd think so. I wouldn't want to take it home. It could be possessed by a thousand other poops. You know? I don't understand what's going on there. Seems like there might be some corporate malfeasance that's being pushed off onto me. And that's why I don't get coffee anymore. Which is leading to other problems. Because now, instead of like just having coffee and being energetic, I'm just like, oh, I've done a lot of work. I'm kind of tired. I'm going to go just sit on the toilet for a while. I think I might be developing a hemorrhoid.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, I gotta find somewhere else to sit. I gotta just like, I don't know, just like find a like chair and like just kind of put it like in a corner or like a room we don't use or something. Just hide in there and hope no one sees me.
So yeah, they're probably losing. They have to be. I don't understand it at all because by not buying coffee, I feel like they're losing productivity for sure from people.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
So it's not. There's no way they were spending $40 a week per person.
On coffee, no.
On coffee and other shit.
Yeah, I don't see it. I don't know. It seems like bullshit.
It seems like they need to adjust their expectations.
It seems like they should bring back the coffee. The CEO. Or the owner, I don't quite know what his position is. Because there's also a president, so he's not that. Has this whiteboard in his office that's for like just the past year or so just had like a stupid slogan on it. That's like, it says, want it, get it, capacity to do it. which is stupid, but I just want to write on each one afterwards, coffee, coffee, coffee. We want it. You should get it. And you have the capacity to get coffee.
Yeah, it's...
It's sick.
It is. It's fucked up.
It's depraved. It's a violation of my rights as an American and as a worker. And I'm going to maybe find a new job.
Well, no better time than right after you moved out of your parents' house.
I know, right? it's quite a conundrum. But the good thing is I've moved like directly next to like an industrial park, so I'm not hurting for jobs.
Well, that's good.
Drive past a metal rolling plant every day. I could be up in there rolling metal. Just, I don't know what that means, but I could just, I guess you just push it in. It's like a big sheet and just roll it up like a big joint all day long to big tubes, and you ship it out to people who need it.
Yeah, you could that, do that.
I could do that. My back would probably be fine.
I don't know.
I don't know.
Depends on how hard it is to roll it.
Maybe I should go back to community college and just get like some kind of like IT certification or something.
Honestly, it's probably not worth the effort.
Oh, God.
Like, okay. I feel like entry level, like even if you got a certification, you'd start out at like an entry level IT job, and most of them don't require any certifications.
I don't require any. Okay, well.
Education's kind of a ripoff a lot of the time.
What if I became an accountant?
You would probably need a certification for that.
Watch the numbers tumble. Watch the figures roll right in.
You could fluff up the numbers. You could cook the books.
Oh, I'd be so good at cooking the books.
You should probably cook the books for your current employer.
I should become a mob accountant. Okay.
That's how you get whacked. You can't cook the books for the mob unless they tell you to.
They'll tell me to.
Well, yeah, then you can cook the books.
That's what they brought me in to do. The books were undercooked. They weren't al dente. I cook the books so good, they make you slappy your mama. You know?
Well, as long as they have the expectations that you're going to cook the book.
Ha.
This is the second time I tried to transition.
You got it this time. I'm done talking about coffee.
Excellent. So... Expectations is a 1977 film by Anthony Spinelli, but you really wouldn't know it. It definitely feels like more of a 1972 film.
Yeah, it feels out of time.
It is starring Chris Cassidy and Delania Ruffino.
Don't know who they are.
Montana and Margot, respectively. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We also have joining the cast Jack Wright and Joey Silvera.
Oh, yeah. He's like Joey Silvera.
Yeah, with a C.
Yeah.
Who plays Joey Donovan. We also have Desiree West and Blair Harris rounding out the cast. It's a light cast, light storyline, light production values. Light just about everything. And this is kind of the Prince and the Pauper story in a way.
Yeah, it is. It's
two people trading lives.
Two people trade lives. One, a buttoned up kind of career girl, I guess. She's not married to anyone.
She's not. Does she have a career?
Probably. She has a nice apartment.
She's buttoned up.
She's buttoned up, and she's tired of it. So she wants to trade lives with a pauper.
Yeah.
And yeah, two paupers down in the slums.
Yeah, so Margot is our buttoned-up lady, Delania Ruffino, and she trades lives with Montana, Chris Cassidy, who appears to be a sex worker. Yeah. Margot's tired of having sex with Blair Harris and decides that she wants to have sex with Joey Silvera, I guess.
Yes. There's a lot going on.
There's a lot of potential here.
Yeah.
There's a lot of like plot threads that could have been seen through to the end, but I don't think I'm revealing too much at this point. We've already pulled the curtain back enough to for me to just say those plot threads aren't really taken to their full extent.
Nevertheless, we must follow the threads through to the end.
Yes, we're going to follow those threads and then tie everything together and make some sense of it.
Make a noose.
I will say, just to get people excited, next week's film is somewhat similar in the sense that there's a lot of plot threads there, and it's also kind of a not super high production value film, but there's a lot more effort put into chasing down those plot threads and doing a lot of things with them, whether the results are particularly good or not in various cases. But that's just because Sean Costello, the actual director of Afternoon Delights, he doesn't always hit home runs, but he thinks things through.
Yeah.
And comes up with excuses to have sex scenes with CJ Lang. So yeah,
he makes a movie happen.
He does.
He's more of an artist. He's got some hits under his belt. Anthony Spinelli is just shooting blanks.
But yeah, that's what we have to say to start out about expectations. That's how we can set your expectations for expectations.
They're great expectations.
They are great expectations in the sense that they're honest and they let you know what to look forward to and what to expect.
Okay.
So, with that being the case, we're going to go ahead and take a break, and then you guys can expect to hear a little bit more about expectations.
Come on, Montana. I'm beginning to feel ridiculous out here. Hello.
I waited for the reaction to see if he recognized that I was not Montana. He grabbed me. I tried to break away,
what the hell do you think?
But I loved what was happening to me.
You're making penguin sounds?
More of a pig.
Oh, I was thinking of, like, Danny DeVito as the penguin.
Oh, yeah. It was kind of a penguin. I could hear it. Play it back.
Yeah, I'll hit the playback button.
Thank you.
Okay. Well, the time has come. And it's time to talk expectations.
I've been waiting for this for so long.
So we open on a shot of some handwritten letters on screen, and we get our expectations title card and some on-screen credits. Here, Anthony Spinelli is credited as Arvid Beller. Mm-hmm. My dear friend Lynn, the letter starts, as we hear that as narration. It goes on to explain that it's been 2 months since the writer, here Margot, dropped out of their former lifestyle, and this letter is to fill Lynn in on what's happening. Lynn, of course, being somebody that we never meet.
That's fine. It's just, it's a confessional.
It's a storytelling device, which is fine in itself.
I'm glad it has one.
Yeah. So we see Margot in bed making out with Blair Harris, credited here as a man. They're both nude here, except for her sheer black panties, and they turn out the lights. We're told that the last 5 years has been tough. She said that she was never in love, and that being in bed with somebody doesn't mean that she's in love with them. We see Margot grinding on Blair a bit and him reaching into her panties and rubbing her ass, then reaching in to play with her clit. This continues for a couple of minutes with her seemingly grabbing his arm and kind of controlling his hand's movements. He licks and sucks on her nipples a bit as she caresses his shoulders. Margot's panties get tossed away and the manual stimulation continues, with Blair Harris really mashing his hand into her pussy. They make out a bit more, and we cut to a close-up of Margot putting Blair's cock into her mouth. She sucks and strokes his cock for a bit as he moans, She finishes him off, continuing to stroke it and smear his cum onto her face and lips. We hear Margot's narration continue. She tells us that this is why she put the ad in that underground paper. He was like all the men in her life, tall, dark, and boring. But she became excited thinking about the ad. And she says that she was excited when she met Montana. She had taken care of the legal things that needed to be done, changed the driver's license and the social security cards.
Yeah, she's like a fixer or something for like the mob. She can just do all this stuff for right. you.
She notes that she has friends in high places. We hear Montana's voice telling Margot to be sure to follow the rules. Margot replies that she doesn't like rules. We're told that this is the last time that they would meet as themselves. Then, when they left, Margot would be Montana, and Montana would be Margot. So, that's the gist of the scheme here.
Yeah, they swapped.
Margot in narration tells us what she didn't know was they were heading for a dangerous collision.
They're like walking through the park during this scene.
Yeah.
And they reach, like they walk from the far end, reach the camera. There's like a very quick cut, and they're just turning around and walking away.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It's an Anthony Spinelli production. One of those great techniques.
We see Margot walk into an apartment that we're told is Montana's. She says in narration that her heart was beating so loud she thought everyone in the building could hear it. She wondered if she could live another woman's life. That of the loose woman that Montana said she was. We see Margot putting on Montana's tight jeans, noting that she had to put herself in Montana's clothes. Then, Margot gets a knock at the door. And it's Joey there to see Montana. Margot asks what he wants, and Joey says that she had told him to meet her there today. In narration, Margot wonders if Joey would notice that she wasn't Montana. It's worth noting that Margot and Montana don't look anything alike.
Yeah. One's blonde and one's brunette, even.
Yeah. Yes. And facially, body type, everything, they're different.
You know, maybe Joey's not that smart.
And he seems not to be.
Yeah.
Joey pulls her towards him, and she says in narration that she was excited by this. They exchange some words, and Margot seems to be a bit put off by Joey's behavior and asks him to leave. Joey responds by grabbing a hold of her and forcing her onto the bed, grabbing onto her face and pushing it. He's asking her to tell him stories about her doing nasty things and fucking the shit out of guys. Joey tells Margot he's going to do the same to her, talking about how women in tight jeans are hot and fondling her through her jeans. At first, he's very forceful, but then he relaxes a bit as she gets into it. She notes that her body gyrated with him as he touched her.
Yeah, there's a lot of over-the-clothes petting
in this scene.
This is, if Mormons had porn, this is what it would be like, mostly.
Yeah.
Until the climax, which would just be a soaking scene.
Yes, an hour-long soaking scene.
Yeah. Just a man and a fella, and perhaps another fella, jumping on the bed. Stimulating motion.
She says she was so hot that you could see the nipples right through her shirt, like two ripe cherries ready to be picked.
I really feel like you can tell this film was written by a man.
Yeah. Joey tweaks and rubs Margot's nipples a bit, then rubs her crotch over her jeans more. She notes her life up to now had never been this exciting before. She wondered what Montana was doing as Margot. So we see Montana naked, going through Margot's dresser, looking at her panties and some jewelry. After a couple minutes of this, the doorbell rings and Montana throws on a robe and answers through the intercom asking who it was. I'm not clear who it was, but she tells them to come up and buzzes them in. So Montana answers the door and the guy at the door asks who she is. This is Vincent, played by Jack Wright. She tells him that she's Margot, and he says that she's not Margot, and adds that he should know. He's her brother.
And he has an eye patch.
Yes, that was my next line.
Okay.
Is this man has an eye patch, which is the most interesting part of this entire film.
Yeah, the mystery behind how this man lost his eye.
But in response to him questioning her, she says, shit. So Vincent asks where his sister is, and Montana tells him that she's fine and explains that they switched identities for a while, like it's no big deal. Montana tells Vincent that Margot's in her apartment, and as she gets closer to Vincent, tells him to relax. They decide to enjoy themselves. She has Vincent sit in a nearby chair and walks around the room, slowly turning off all the lamps, before tossing aside her robe and revealing her body. We cut to Montana on top of Vincent on the couch. She asks, will this be the first time you fucked your sister?
Yeah, he gets mad.
Yes, he threatens to knock her out, and she backs off a bit, and Vincent starts to relax. She then tells him, it could be a hell of a fantasy, and then the two make out hard.
Yeah, all the while there's like this soft R&B that's playing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not sure of the song, but it sounds like you would hear it on the oldies station, you know?
Yeah. So we cut back to Joey shoving his fingers into Margot's mouth, and then making her bite his nipples. He mentions wanting to fuck her, but then rambles about cutting her hair off. Joey makes Margot rub on his cock through his underwear, telling her not to pull it out, and to just squeeze the head. She rubs his cock and balls and sucks and bites his nipples for a bit. Joey has her ask him to fuck her and eat her, but he tells her that he's not going to eat her, but he's going to fuck her. He chokes her a bit and slaps her a bit and calls her a dirty girl. And then he tells her that he changed his mind and that he is going to eat her.
Well, that's good.
He slides down her body and tells her not to move. We see her face moaning a bit and then soon see Joey's cock appear, which she begins to suck. Joey fucks Margot's mouth a bit. He repositions her and finally pulls off her panties and starts to go down on her. Joey licks her clit for a bit and then mounts her missionary and begins to fuck her. Joey spends a couple of minutes railing Margot before pulling out and coming on her pubes. Joey makes out with Margot a bit more. And then we cut to Montana laying naked on the couch. She places a phone call and calls a friend, telling her about her identity swap. She says that she's sure Margot hasn't been with a girl like the woman on the other end before. She suggests her unnamed friend to go see Margot. Vincent is laying on the couch and Montana gets on top of him and starts to kiss him.
Yeah, there's a nice shot when she's on the phone where it starts close and just slowly pulls back.
Yeah.
One of the few nice, really nice pieces in this film. He's getting there.
Yeah.
He's building his chops, even though I think he had like directed Westerns or something before porn.
Okay.
But I guess you had to learn how to direct pornography. It's not the same as directing Westerns, I guess.
Well, to be fair, Anthony Spinelli, up to this point, had directed like...
I know.
15-plus porn films?
I know. He's a slow learner.
Yeah, clearly.
Yeah, you know, he's just... it takes him a while.
But by 1977, he's making movies like this and Oriental Babysitter.
Man. This was so much better than Oriental Babysitter.
And it's and then next year he makes Sex World, which isn't quite a masterpiece, but it feels like it came from somebody else.
But yeah, sorry to distract.
But yeah, Montana gets on top of Vincent and starts to kiss him. Vincent asks what her name is, and she tells him Margot. Vincent gets upset at this and suggests that she was sent by the devil to give him impure thoughts that he's never had before. He's beginning to enjoy it.
I'll say he's going to need hypnosis to,
yeah.
work that out, you know?
Yeah, some hypnerotica could really help him out.
Yeah, especially if these bad thoughts become recurring and he becomes like a sleepster baiting man.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Montana tells him to stop talking and makes out with him more. She leans back and Vincent fingers her. Vincent tells her to pull his pants down. You always wanted to do that, didn't you, Margot? So Vincent's definitely getting into the fantasy now. She starts to suck Vincent's cock as he continues to call her Margot. She tooths his dick a little bit as she's going at it. Vincent tells Montana to get on his cock, and she mounts him cowgirl as he pinches and tweaks her nipples and bounces her breasts around. Montana rides Vincent's cock for a bit. He eventually pulls out, and we see him spurt out cum as Montana reaches behind her ass and rubs his cock with her hand. She dismounts and gives it a bit more sucking, and they make out a bit more.
Did you mention how he furiously jostles her tits back and forth?
Yeah, a bit. I said that
he really grabs,
bounces her breasts around. Yeah.
He really gives them a shake.
A real juggling.
Yeah. They are all mixed up. They're all twisted together now.
It's a real milkshake.
Yeah. It's like, you know, they're all twisted.
Tied them together like a knot.
Yeah, like a clown. Like a balloon. You didn't even mention it.
We see the door to Montana's apartment open and some feet shuffling across the floor. The camera pans up to reveal Jenny, played by Desiree West. Mm-hmm. Who finds Margot naked in the bed. Margot is shocked awake and asks who Jenny is. She tells Margot that it's Jenny, who, and of course she calls Margot Montana, playing along with the ruse. She says that she meets with her a few times a week. Margot says that she's not into this sort of thing, clearly referring to fucking other women. Jenny tells Margot not to worry, that she won't do anything she doesn't want to do. So Jenny undresses and climbs into bed with Margot. She grabs Margot's hand and puts it on her breasts. Jenny asks Margot what she wants her to do, and Margot says, "Everything." So we see Jenny lick and suck on Margot's nipples. The ladies make out a bit and caress each other's breasts and kiss all over each other's asses. Jenny reaches into Margot's panties and plays with her pussy a bit. We then cut to Margot straddling Jenny's face as Jenny licks her clit and uses her fingers to tease it as well. After a bit more of this, we fade out and cut to the next day, where Margot answers a ringing phone. On the other end, it's Montana, who's bragging about fucking Margot's brother, who we see next to her in bed. Margot gives Montana crap about how she wasn't supposed to call her for the first couple of weeks, and then says that she's not supposed to be fucking with her family either. Montana talks about how her brother got so turned on pretending to fuck her. She adds if that wasn't a fantasy before, it sure is now. Margot says she must be drunk, and Montana says she's not. She's feeling great, in fact. Margot says she's coming over, but Montana says she can't. She adds if Margot wants, she can talk to Vincent now. Montana hands Vincent the phone and tells him somebody named Montana wants to talk to him. Vincent accepts the phone, then hangs it up.
Damn. She really got, like, single white femaled.
Yeah.
She just got completely, like, replaced very quickly.
Yes. Margot on the other end calls out, "Montana!
Montana!"
Meanwhile, Vincent gets on top of Montana and kisses her and sucks on her breasts. They shift positions and Montana gets down and starts to suck his cock. Vincent moans about how good it is, calling Montana sweet sister. She sucks and licks his cock until he blows another load, getting it all over her face. Montana climbs up to him, cum still on her face, and tells him she loves it when a man comes in her mouth, and that when he shot... she came too.
Yeah, she opened up.
Oh, yeah.
She opened up and she came too.
She asks if she can suck his cock whenever she wants, and he says, "Yeah." And they share a cummy kiss.
Aw.
We cut to the streets and get some nighttime shots. There's a knock at the door as Vincent and Montana are laying around in their underwear. Vincent answers the door and asks who it is. Of course, it's the real Margot who's yelling about how Montana broke the rules. Vincent asks Montana if she knows a Montana. This is confusing to say because people are pretending to be each other.
I think the listeners at home get it.
So Montana shrugs her shoulders and Vincent slams the door. Margot knocks again harder. We then cut to a dark scene where Margot and Montana are making out. Montana says she wishes she had a cock so she could feel Margot and fuck her the way that a man does. In narration, Margot says she's not sure when the game became a nightmare and then a reality to her. She never stopped to think, was this good or bad? She just crawled into Montana's life. We then see Margot licking and sucking on Montana's breasts on the floor. Then we watch as Margot goes down on Montana. Montana spends some time sucking on Margot's nipples before going down on her. In narration, Margot says that Montana could call her anything she wanted, and she would play any part she wanted to play in her strange fantasies. Then we hear her finish the letter. Stay well, your good friend Margot. And then we get credits. And that was the entirety of Expectations.
Wow. You know, my expectations, they were fulfilled. Or maybe they weren't. Stay tuned.
So yeah, we're going to take a quick break and then we'll be back to give our final thoughts on Expectations.
Who are you?
You mean who am I?
Just what I said. Who are you?
I'm Margot.
Like hell you're Margot.
Now, just a minute. Just who the hell do you think you are coming into my house like this, disrupting everything and causing all kinds of trouble?
I'm her brother.
I don't give a fuck who you are. You just can't come barging in here like... You're who?
Her brother.
Oh, shit.
I beg your pardon.
Shit, don't you people ever cuss when you get mad? Shit, I'm pissed.
It's a liquid aloha.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's the Kona Big Wave.
Yeah, it's 25 ounces. It's what I'm enjoying right now.
Yeah, and I've got 25 ounces, but it's just old Stella Artois.
Yeah.
Which is by no means bad.
No, I didn't know what you would like, and I was like, that one's fancy enough.
I appreciate it. And I see that you're being fancy as you put your pinky up as you were drinking your Kona Big Wave.
I do. I like to extend it. I like to show a bit of class. Even, it feels good, right?
Yeah. See, yeah, I'm stretching my pinky up now, drinking my Stella.
Good. Gets the pinky. You don't work it much. It's good to get it. Make sure it doesn't get stiff. You don't want to get arthritis in it.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's usually, if you got the two in the pink and the one in the stink, the one in the stink is...
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you got to keep your pinky nimble for the shocker.
Yeah. If you want to do the shocker, you can't let your pinky get all arthritic and shitty. So,
oh, yeah.
Don't forget about it. I know it's the smallest one, but, you know.
Also, just to say, you know, if she's in doggy position, your pinky might be in the other hole.
Yeah, it just depends, you know.
Either way... It's an important part of the whole process.
If you're doing the shocker, the pinky's involved.
If you're doing the shocker, don't forget your raincoat. Oh, wait, it's time once again.
The raincoat reveal.
That's a good Crypt Keeper laugh, boss.
No, that's Wario.
Yeah. Oh, I saw...
Wario?
Close. I saw a purple PT Cruiser... And the driver was wearing a big purple beret and had a long, thin nose. I'm almost certain it was Waluigi.
Excellent.
Yeah, he was throwing banana peels out of his car at people and chucking turtles and such.
Oh, yeah, I guess that makes sense.
Yeah, he's a bad dude.
Yeah, he is.
Do you know what, they're not brothers?
Really?
They're just friends. Oh, well, I guess they're like, you know, like partners in crime.
Okay.
I don't know if they're friends. I don't know if they like...
They're colleagues?
Sure. They will... it's weird that Mario and Luigi are brothers, but the people pretending to be them aren't. But maybe that makes sense.
Yeah, because they're...
They don't have a real bond. They're right. Counterfeits.
Yeah, they got together and decided to... become their dastardly clones, and the fact that they weren't brothers wasn't really material to their plot.
No, and it all works symbolically. There's a lot of deep lore in the Mario series. We were going to cover Super Horneo Brothers 2 soon and get into all that, but right now we're not.
No, right now instead we're talking about expectations and it's...
what I thought of it.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I'll get into it. It feels like an incomplete film.
Yes.
It's a film, like you said at the beginning, that sets up a lot of interesting plot threads, mm-hmm. as far as like the Prince and the Pauper switch and the incest theme and the sort of kind of living like a lascivious life as a, I don't know, just dirty lady named Montana.
Right.
But it's, I don't know. I don't think Anthony Spinelli has the chops.
Yeah.
Certainly he didn't put his full ass into this one. Or maybe he did. I don't know.
It certainly feels half or less assed.
Yeah. Compared to some of his earlier stuff, like Succula that we've covered, this definitely feels more. I was telling you earlier, I think this material would be handled better by, say, an Andy Milligan or a Roberta Findlay.
I agree.
I think given to one of them, this film could really have had some, could have reached shocking heights.
Yeah, I agree. Especially, you know, Andy Milligan and to a lesser extent, Roberta Findlay are really good at like characters in really grimy situations mm-hmm. yelling at each other.
Right. And that's exactly what this film calls for more of.
Yeah, there's a little bit of it here, but it never goes anywhere.
Yeah, and the incest stuff, or faux incest stuff, is pretty good. That's kind of a Milligan-ish touch, I think.
Yeah.
Have you seen Seeds?
I don't have a good memory of it. I saw it a long time ago, but yeah.
It's definitely worth a rewatch. It's great.
I think so. I think that I watched it at a time where I didn't quite get Anthony Milligan.
Yeah.
And I didn't, like, love it when I watched it, but I think as somebody who... watch that whole Andy Milligan box set.
I think it's time for a rewatch.
Yeah.
A reassessment. But as far as assessing expectations, I would say what's here I like certainly more than some of his earlier work. I think the story comes along further, but as I said, it's not fully explored.
Yeah.
It does, I guess, sort of resolve in its way, but... it's definitely a film that needed more time to cook, and it is pretty short. It's only 70 minutes.
Right.
I don't know that another 20 minutes would have necessarily helped. I don't know if he would have used it correctly.
Yeah.
But a little bit more expanding on her decline mm-hmm. into being like a sleazy like non-entity would have been cool.
Yeah, and
I think would have... helped build her character up more instead of she's just kind of someone who's dumb and got swindled into swapping lives.
Yeah, and I think that essentially the film, it has like kind of a very vague ending to it. Like, I kind of get that the gist of it is that they swapped lives and now they're like mentally...
yeah, they're permanently swapped.
Yeah, I mean... They've accepted it more or less, but like I think that there was an opportunity for there to be like consequences to actions and like things that happen as a result of what happened.
Yeah.
But essentially there was a premise set up
mm-hmm.
and none of the or like 20% of it was explored and the other 80% wasn't.
Yeah.
Because like really the only results of all of this were that Margot's brother now has an incest fantasy.
Yeah.
And...
but not
that's
really,
basically it.
But not really for his actual sister, maybe? Though that could have been explored.
That would be the other 80% of the movie.
You know, this movie sets up a lot of expectations, but it fails to live up to them. I'm going to give Anthony Spinelli a much-deserved... bonk of the week.
Okay.
And I'm going to give this film 2.5. I see the vision. I appreciate uh-huh. it. There's some solid performances from some unknowns. I think Joey Silvera and Desiree West both as people we know, both had good sex scenes, especially Silvera's, I thought was pretty nasty and hot in its way.
Yeah.
But I would just, I would give it like a 2.5. I think okay. It's, there's something there, but not enough of it.
Okay. I am going to, I mean, I basically agree with everything you said. I think I was a little bit more annoyed by the movie than you were.
Uh-huh.
And so I'm going to give it 2 stars.
Fair.
I just think that, like, there was all of this setup, and I don't even think that, like, it needed, like, to have, like, a great resolution or, like, a really well-thought-out plot line that takes things past the first third of the movie. I just really think that there was a lot set up, a lot of promise, and it just completely shit the bed trying to do what it did. I mean, at the end of the day, I'm sure that Anthony Spinelli got some money from some mobster, and they were like, make a movie in a weekend. And when you consider all of that, maybe this is good for what limitations he had, what little time he had to prepare,
yeah.
What little budget he had. But at the end of the day, I'm not grading films on, you know, on the circumstances not, under which they were
whether
made.
Whether or not he's going to get his thumbs broken isn't important to me.
Right. Gerard Damiano. Damiano was under threat of the mafia for the movies he made, and his movies were much better and made years earlier. Granted, I guess his mobster people probably gave him, if nothing else, more time to get it done.
They saw Deep Throat, and they're like, we have to let this man work.
Yeah. And they fucked him out of money out of every movie, but they let him work, at least.
They let him work. They saw Succula, and they're like, just get this man in and out as fast as possible.
I guess so, yeah. So, I think that, unfortunately, my expectations were too high for this film.
Ha.
And because of that, I was more disappointed. Not because I thought it was going to be great, but more so just because by the end of the first third or so of the movie, I was like, okay, these plot points have to go somewhere fun. And then, for the most part, they didn't. And the sex scenes aren't great. The music is serviceable. It's not annoying, but, like, not noteworthy.
Just, yeah, it's just kind of the low-grade background noise.
The way that the sex...
A lot of bongos, I'll add. A lot of bongos.
The way the sex scenes were shot feel more 1974 than 1977.
Yeah, I thought that was... This movie feels very dated.
And, yeah, the sex scenes aren't particularly hot. I will agree, though, that Joey Silvera's scene is probably the best because he's actually getting into it, really.
Mm-hmm.
He's, being forceful and kind of gross, but that's something in his scene versus the other scenes.
Yeah.
There's a lot of close-ups in this movie. A lot of the close-up penetration, close-up blowjobs and stuff like that.
Yeah, I was saying to my partner while I was watching it that I would, like, eliminate, like, some of these shots from porn if I could.
Yeah.
Just, like, some of the extreme close-up penetration things where it's just, like, the screen is just, like, full flesh just like bouncing. And I was like, you can probably get rid of that.
Yeah, just lots of hair and gaping holes.
Yeah.
And, you know, I do like the idea of there being, you know, a 20-foot high screen that has these gigantic close-up penetration shots on them. That's amusing to me.
Yeah.
But as an actual person watching the movie, I'm not against close-ups, but close-ups, these particular close-ups, weren't the most appealing close-ups you can have.
You should start projecting porn on a big... Build a big screen in your backyard.
Yeah.
Just start projecting it every night.
It's the Raincoat Theater. It's in my backyard.
Yeah, it's the Raincoat Theater in the park.
I wish Jamie Gillis was still alive. We could have him do Shakespeare monologues before each showing.
Yeah, and he... Do him naked, and then he'd get bit by a tick. And he would go, and he'd get Lyme.
Get Lyme disease.
From your backyard.
Well, shit.
Yeah. Much to think about.
We could also have him reenact the sex scenes. But it's just him naked, thrusting the air and stuff.
Yeah, that's perfect. I'm excited about the Raincoat Festival.
You
want to get your tickets now.
Yeah, just go to patreon.com/raincoatreport and sign up for our Patreon. Yes. And you'll get 2 bonus episodes every month. This Friday, in fact, we're going to be talking about a film that we sort of watched on accident. But it's about sisterhood and love between women.
Yeah, I love sisterhood. It's about confusing file names.
Yes, it's a story. You get to hear the full story of me confusing or mixing up file names.
Yeah, it's
or at exciting. Least my Plex server misscanning things, and then us watching a movie we didn't intend to watch. But overall, it was something different. I'll say that.
It's different from our usual fare.
But if you want to keep up on our usual and unusual fare, you can also follow us on Twitter X as at Raincoat Report.
Yes.
Do you ever post on that?
Sure.
Okay, cool. And in the meantime...
Oh, I'm on Instagram. You forgot that.
Oh, Instagram at Raincoat Report. I thought... Are you still posting there?
Yes.
Okay, cool.
I post as much as I can.
Okay.
My life is busy and I'm tired all the time now because I don't get any coffee.
But in the meantime, if you're going to the Raincoat Festival, don't forget your raincoat.
Yeah, it'll get lime.
Yeah, you never know where Jamie Gillis is going to spray.
Yeah, you don't know where he's been.
She would be in total control of my mind and body for as long as she wanted to. She could call me Montana or Margot, Mary, Melissa, or any other name that would fit her fantasy of the moment. I just wanted to be with her for as long as she would have me and fill any part she wanted me to play in her sometimes very strange fantasies. Stay well, your good friend,